What's up? This is Movies On Up. I forgot the tag. There it is. What's up? This is Movies On Up. Collide with Destiny. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host of Destiny, Mr. Ryan.
Always looking to avoid a collision.
We are Movies On Up. Our tagline this week, Collide with Destiny. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will win a huge Titanic Movies On Up prize package sailed right to your door. Yeah, because
it's
going to
get boat. It will actually get to its destination.
Yeah, even in the winter. This week, Madea goes to a funeral, I believe.
That sounds about right.
I originally had an episode for this week that I don't know why, so we cut it.
I don't think Doug Liman directed Madea.
Yeah, no. And then we were going to do Death at a Funeral because it's a funeral comedy. I assume Madea is a comedy.
A safe assumption.
Yeah. And we couldn't do favorite Tyler Perry movies. So
it'd be a really short list.
Yeah.
I don't think between the two of us, we've seen none.
He did the Idris Elba one.
I was thinking like Madea, but
yeah,
if we expand that to all Tyler Perry,
he was in Star Trek.
Yeah. And that movie where he was like,
he's in Gone Girl.
Yeah. He's been in a couple.
And he was in Alex Cross.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
But yeah, it's Madea, the funeral. So we were thinking the funeral path. And then Ryan thought, hey, Valentine's Day was this month. What about love stories mixed with funeral? So we're doing our favorite love stories where somebody dies. That
yeah.
sum it up pretty much?
I think so. This is one of the few episodes.
Spoiler alert.
Exactly. Where I think the entire list is spoilery. So if you don't know that Leo dies at the end of Titanic, sorry for spoiler.
That was his destiny that he collided with.
Yes. Sorry for spoiling that for you right at the top. I think my newest movie on this list is from 2014. I don't feel bad for spoiling these.
Most of mine are older, and
yes.
The newest one, the newer two, one it happens early, and the other it's in the title.
I guess if you're really squeamish about things, like, I will mention that there's a death. Most of the time I tell you who it is. If I feel like it's a spoiler, and I think my number four, it might be a spoiler. I don't know. Maybe just like fast forward through that part if you don't want a movie from 1999 spoiled for you. It's 20 years old.
Let's
if you were
going to
see it, I think you would have watched it already.
Release the spoilers. Ryan, your number five favorite love story where somebody dies.
Is a movie that you hate, so I didn't have to worry about crossover here. When you think of love stories, certainly one of the first names that comes to mind is Darren Aronofsky. And he did one in 2006 called The Fountain, starring Hugh Jackman and perhaps Academy Award winner Rachel Weisz by this point, who knows, and Ellen Burstyn. It is fair to say that I enjoy the storytelling mechanic here. On the surface, you've got three stories taking place over the span of 1,000 years or so, give or take. Thematically, they're all about trying to cheat death. The easiest to follow is the modern-day set story of Jackman trying to cure his wife's leukemia. Spoiler alert, he doesn't. It happens relatively early in the movie, and all three of these end in death, but also rebirth. Admittedly, death is a shitty thing, but if you can focus on the rebirth or reunion with those who have already passed, it's a bit easier to bear. Some may see this movie and its storytelling as a bit derivative, but Aronofsky is a tremendously visual filmmaker, and he creates a beautiful motif here, which could only be accomplished through repetition. And what is more repetitive than birth, love, and death? Maybe it's a bit art housey. Certainly, chronologically, the latest segment, which takes place like on a spaceship with a tree and Jackman the astronaut, that's a little art housey. That's 2001-ish. The earliest story is Jackman is a conquistador looking for the Tree of Life. That one ends in kind of a strange way, but again, I enjoy the motif. It's a timeless thing. You can't have birth without death. You can't have death without birth. They're bound together, and Aronofsky shows that in The Fountain.
My number five, not nearly as deep as The Fountain, nor directed by somebody as visionary as Aronofsky. It is from 1993, directed by Tony Bill, starring Christian Slater, But then Marissa Tomei and Rosie Perez, it is Untamed Heart. This is one of those movies that 14-year-old me saw multiple times in the theater, probably mostly due to my love of Marissa Tomei. And coming off of Pump Up the Volume, I was still into Christian Slater. For some reason, this movie always resonated with me. I liked it. Christian Slater's this shy, weird busboy. Marissa Tomei's this gorgeous, beautiful waitress. He saves her one day, and they go on to fall in love. Rosie Perez is being 1993 Rosie Perez, who's awesome. Love her in this movie as like the friend, the other waitress. It's actually a really good, charming love story, but she sells it. Marissa Tomei is this movie. You could replace Christian Slater with anybody. Josh Hartnett could have nailed this movie, but it's a Marissa Tomei movie. Not in 92. He'd have been too young.
I enjoy Josh Hartnett, though.
You would. I don't know what that means. You know, they fall in love. He claims he has a baboon heart, and he dies at the end. Spoiler alert. For some reason, it's one of those movies that, like, oh, I love this movie. I really like this movie, and it's got one of my favorite lines ever is she walks into his apartment. The dog comes up. It's like, oh, what's his name? And Christian Slater just goes, I don't know. He never told me. For some reason, I've always loved that line. But yeah, Untamed Heart, it's one of those, like, yeah, it's a love story. It's more of a love story than a tragedy until the end. He dies after catching a hockey puck. But yeah, it's a good movie.
If you're really quick and you want to shut the movie off right after he catches the hockey puck, it has a completely different ending. You could probably stand to shut my number four off maybe about 10 minutes early. And again, it's a completely different movie. This is one that I never would have imagined putting on a list, but it completely fits the list. There are a lot of movies that are similar to this in that they're very sappy. But it's just the example that I chose to pick because I've never talked about Brad Siberling's City of Angels before from 1999, starring Nick Cage, Meg Ryan, and Dennis Franz. Full disclosure, this was going to be Leaving Las Vegas. I fucking love that movie. Cage is brilliant. And people die. But I saw a more obvious opportunity to put in a movie that had never been mentioned on the show before in City of Angels, so I took it. It is a sappier remake than the 1987 German movie Wings of Desire, which, with a title like Wings of Desire, it's hard to imagine that you could have a sappier version.
Sounds like a Hammerfall song.
It kind of does. In case you can't guess from either of the titles, it is about an angel that decides between living out his life as an angel or giving into his desire and giving up his wings, so to speak. City of Angels has two things going for it that Wings of Desire does not have. One of which is Nick Cage. The second of which is the Goo Goo Dolls. Nicolas Cage, I have come to the conclusion, is good. He gives whatever is required for whatever movie he's in. Here, he's a love-struck angel who, spoiler alert, gives up immortality for a real short romance with an incredibly irresponsible bike-riding Meg Ryan. Both are more than capable of leading a romance movie. Hell, Meg Ryan made a career out of it. It's heavy on the melodrama and religious overtones, matched by the tones of Iris, which is exactly the kind of song you would expect in this kind of movie in 1999. This movie accomplishes exactly what it sets out to do, so hunker down, bring your tissues, and sing along.
I worked at a Blockbuster Video when this movie came out on VHS, and we had a...
Was it playing in the store?
A VHS that just looped. It was only a 90-minute VHS. Iris was played three times in that 90 minutes. So in an eight-hour shift, I heard Iris so many times, but you know what? Loved it. Still love that song. Such a good song. This was going to get mentioned today. It's one of my also-rans. I don't like the movie.
Oh, it's not great.
Oh, no. But, and I don't know what this says about me as a person. This is one of the two, there's two movies that when I think of, like, that shouldn't be as funny as it is to me.
When she dies?
When she dies, like him giving up eternity, like as an angel, for her to get hit by a stupid car, makes me laugh almost as much as that little shit in Pay It Forward getting stabbed and dying at the end of that. For some reason, those are two of my favorite movie deaths that shouldn't be funny, but I find them hysterical for some reason. So this movie was, it was in my also-rans. It was going to get mentioned.
I'm glad I could oblige you.
My number four, spoiler alert, somebody dies in 2015's Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, starring Thomas Mann, Olivia Cooke, and RJ Seiler. This movie is charming as hell. I love Olivia Cooke. I think she is great in everything she's in. Really like R.J. Seiler. He was great with Dacre Montgomery in the Power Rangers movie. Hashtag Dacre Montgomery for Batman. And then Thomas Mann, he's a competent leading man. We're in this phase now where there's all these just young white guys that are all competent. It's not like the early 2000s when you had like Skeet Ulrich and Josh Hartnett and all these other just
Josh Hartnett.
Bland dudes that were like, whatever, they're just getting these roles because whatever. You have dudes like Thomas Mann and the Ready Player One kid, Ty Sheridan, yeah. Dylan Minnette.
I've got another one in my number two.
Yeah.
It's basically the analog to this one.
Yeah. But, him too. There's a lot of them. But Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, it's a charming, sweet movie. It's fun. The chemistry between Thomas Mann and R.J. Seiler is great. The chemistry between Olivia Cooke and Thomas Mann is really, really great. The videos they make are good. It's just a cute story. It's a fun... Not fun. She dies at the end.
But she does. She's the dying girl.
Yeah. It's a good story. And all three, you know, me and Earl and the dying girl all give really good performances. It's a really, really good movie. And if you're just looking for like just a charming love story that, you know, she's dying. So it doesn't come as a big shock. But
it's advertised.
Yeah.
The death is not advertised in my number three. And it comes... I guess right at the end of Act Two, and man, is it one that you don't see coming. It's from 1991, so again, I don't feel bad spoiling Howard Zeef's My Girl for you if you haven't seen that one, starring Anna Chomsky, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Thomas J. Macaulay Culkin. If you weren't alive to watch 90s movies in the 90s, they did not sugarcoat a damn thing for kids. And I think My Girl might be the best example of that. Veda's mom dies, and she grows up with an absent father in a funeral home. That's bound to create a weird kid. She's obsessed with death and sickness, two really heavy themes for a movie. You can add in a subplot where the only other mentally functioning lady in her life seems to choose the absent father over Veda, and things look a little rough for her. It is a damn good thing. She's got a BFF in Little Thomas J. And man, does that just kick you right in the nuts. This is the only movie on my list where I think the death just comes out of the blue. Had he not gone back to get that stupid mood ring, you could easily see a scenario where Thomas J. and Veda realize that they love each other and get married after high school and just have a fantastic life together. But the bees, those damn bees, never gave him the chance. Chlumsky and Culkin had such great chemistry that it almost felt like a Stand By Me or a movie where there's an entire group of kid actors, but it's just the two of them. They were able to fill up the screen without having to cram in any other characters. The two of them alone was enough. It was Thomas J. and Veda until it wasn't.
It's another one of my favorite movie deaths. Something about that death I love. I didn't think of this movie because I don't sexualize little children like that, but I do love this
movie.
It's
a love story.
I know it is. Yeah. As soon as you said it, it's like, how the F did I not think of that? Kira, my youngest daughter, she's the fourth of five.
Why did you have daughter in air quotes?
Because I said youngest daughter. She's not my youngest kid.
Right.
She's my youngest daughter.
Yeah, but that doesn't belong in air quotes.
It was only half air quotes. But for a while, her name was going to be Veda.
Oh.
Because we both like this movie.
Yeah.
I was kicking myself because I didn't think of this one.
But really, the death, if you think about it.
Oh, I didn't see it coming.
No, I didn't either. They tell you that he's allergic to bees. And he starts fucking with bees. That should be, wait a minute.
Well, but at the time, I was their age.
Yeah.
I was like 13, 14. I was invincible too.
Yeah.
So like,
I wasn't that old, but yeah, I didn't pick up on the, oh, he's allergic to bees. It's fine. They're not going to kill a kid. Fuck you, they won't. Yeah.
My number three, not a spoiler alert, because the death happens early, very early, but it sets in motion the rest of it. So, yeah, it's not a falling in love story and then they die. It's they die and here's what happens because of how much he loves in 2009's Up. The first 5 minutes of this movie are more gut-wrenching and sad than I think anything else we're going to mention on these lists. I mean, maybe it's a cop-out that I picked one that happened so early, But without her passing away, you don't have the rest of the movie. So he's entirely motivated by the passing of his loved one. Everything he's doing is because of her. And he just happens to take a Boy Scout with him.
Like you mentioned, it happens. I want to say it's like the opening montage in the movie is you see this who's going to be the main character. You see his love story kind of unfold. And it happens so quickly, you really don't have a chance to get attached. And I'm trying to remember, like, if warning bells were going off in my head as I'm seeing this, like, well, I know the old guy's in the movie, but I don't remember seeing his wife.
Yeah,
are they going to kill her?
Yeah, you're not expecting it because it's right out the gate.
Yeah, they don't mess around, but it's fantastic filmmaking in that they can make you care so much about a character you've only known for minutes, and it created however many internet memes of how sad the beginning of this movie is.
But it does a good job is that, like, you don't really meet her, and then throughout it's like, oh, that's what she would have wanted. Like, yeah. And it's like the house, it's like, that's exactly what she wanted. Like, this character that you didn't have time to bond with, it's mm-hmm. like, oh, that's what she wanted.
You can see her through the rest of the movie, yeah. Kind of. My number two, it is sad, and it is more kid-killing, because apparently that's what I'm into. It is a movie starring another handsome, young, capable white kid actor, Ansel Elgort. He stars opposite Shailene Woodley, Laura Dern, and Sam Trammell, and Josh Boone's The Fault in Our Stars from 2014. Sometimes you don't see a death coming, which is why it stings so badly when Thomas J. gets it. Though, in The Fault in Our Stars, when we meet Woodley's Hazel, they tell you that she has terminal thyroid cancer. That is not a sunny outlook, and you could be forgiven that thinking this would be a love story type story. I had love story on, like, I think we did, like, greatest romance movies. That one didn't make this list because I put it on the last list. She gets sick. She dies at the end of it. I guess you could kind of see that happening where these two kids kind of fall in love, and at the height of everything, she up and dies. And this movie even helps you down that path when Hazel gets really sick before she goes to Amsterdam with Gus. And then this movie pulls that double dick punch when Gus's cancer comes back and kills him about 10 minutes later. As someone who does a fair job, at least I think I do a fair job in approximating human emotions, myself, right along with everyone in that theater, I was approximating the hell out of some real sadness, knowing that not only did the young and charming Gus just die of cancer, effectively killing this very likable couple, but Hazel's also going to die too. That's the thing about this movie, and I guess at times, life. It is incredibly unfair. Killing one of these kids would have been enough to rate this as a tearjerker of the highest order. But Gus's last gift is a eulogy for Hazel, and it reminds us, in the very pit of our despair, that even if it doesn't happen on screen, she's gonna die too. It's a little like Rose freezing to death on that piece of wood just minutes after Leo drowns. It's kind of pointless, but goddamn, those two are really good in this movie, and it's really sad.
How wrong were we about Shailene Woodley?
Like, you know,
I remember us both thinking, like, she's going to be, like, the biggest actress. She's going to be a star.
Because this and Spectacular Now, she was wonderful.
And The Descendants.
Yes.
I thought she should have been nominated for
right.
that.
You know, Divergent was her doing the J-Law thing. Don't know what,
like,
she's doing now.
She's doing that Adrift movie where they're on a boat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sam Claflin or whatever.
Yeah.
My number, whatever we're at now, too. I've talked about this movie before because I believe we've done a favorite Will Smith episode. And this is my favorite Will Smith movie from 2008, directed by Gabrielle Muccino. It's 7 pounds. What?
I thought you were going the one where the dog dies. I Am Legend.
Oh, no. No, there
he
is.
He loved that dog.
There is one with a. That scene's so good. It's one of my favorite, not just favorite Will Smith movies. It's one. We did They Came Together a couple weeks ago, which I feel is one of the most underrated, like, comedies ever. I think 7 pounds is one of. Just when I think of underrated movies that maybe people haven't seen, I think it's 7 pounds because it's Will Smith being Will Smith and, like, acting Will Smith. And it's Rosario Dawson. It's Woody Harrelson. It's this really good drama that turns into a really good love story between Will Smith and Rosario Dawson. And you don't really know what's going on. Like, you know, she's sick. You know, he has a secret. And it all builds up to Suicide by Jellyfish, which I didn't really see it coming when I first saw it. But then you realize why and the whole purpose of everything he did. This one I am trying not to spoil because I think it's really good. And I want people to go watch 7 Pounds because, like, okay, Up you've seen, Ghost, whatever. Like, all these I expect you've seen. But, like, 7 Pounds, I feel like a lot of people haven't. And I feel like I've already spoiled too much. But it's cool. The chemistry between Smith and Rosario Dawson is great. I'd watch either of them in almost anything. And I think it's a really good story that does a good job building up to its climax that I don't think is super predictable.
Shailene Woodley was in that HBO thing, Big Little Lies. Oh, she got nominated for Golden Globe for that. So she's doing that.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I forgot about it. I haven't watched it yet, but
I envisioned her almost like where Emma Stone is, to where it's like pretty much anything she does, it's like, oh, there's a chance she's nominated.
Yeah. My number one does not feature Shailene Woodley at all. I think she would have been 3 when this movie came out. Liam Cunningham, perhaps better known as the Onion Knight from Game of Thrones, mentioned in his press tour for the last season that people shouldn't get too pissed at the ending because eventually everyone dies. That's part of life. And of course it's sad in movies when it happens. And while you may not think of 1994's Forrest Gump as the poster child for love and death in movies, I would argue that the volume of people that Forrest loses is no more, it's actually probably less than most of us will lose in our lives. But all that loss packed into just a couple hours, Robert Zemeckis manages to squeeze Bubba's death. It doesn't happen till maybe about halfway through the movie. We're not even over that. And then his mama dies. And then really it's just a quick jog to Jenny's death. And had it not been for little Haley Joel Osment as Forrest Jr., this might be one of the saddest goddamn movies ever. In 2.5 hours, this guy loses almost everyone he's ever loved. It is a wonder that, just for good measure, they didn't kill Lieutenant Dan, too. Forrest Gump was not the first movie I thought of, but like the Jenny thing, that is the biggest story of Forrest's life, was everything he was doing trying to get him back to Jenny, or trying to get Jenny back to him. And it's not unlike City of Angels, where they finally get together. Not long after that, she ends up dead. And Forrest Gump's kind of the same way. I don't know that people think of it as the love story that it is. Tom Hanks so dominates that movie. And the Jenny subplot, Robin Wright, is a giant part of the movie. But it doesn't actually take as much screen time as you think. I mean, the most time they spend together is when they're kids. From there on out, it's Forrest at Alabama, it's Forrest in the Army, it's Forrest playing ping pong, Forrest running. It's everything not Jenny. But I think not only is that a great example of, you know, love lost, Bubba, he loved Bubba for just a short time, and Bubba dies. And then, you know, the second most important woman in his wife, his mom, she dies too, and that's pretty goddamn sad. You really get the feels for Forrest.
So sometimes when we're doing lists, I'll come up with something and it's like, that might make Ryan mad. Is this kind of cheating? And sometimes I'll cut them. Sometimes I'll leave them in.
This time you left it in.
This time I left it in, and I kind of maybe bent the rules a little bit because we were doing love stories where one of them dies. But, I mean, you did Fault in Our Stars. They both die.
Yeah, not on screen, but yeah.
So my number one, they both die.
Yeah.
But one of them gets a chance to come back and avenge the other one. It is from 1994, directed by Alex Proyas. It is The Crow.
Yep, that's exactly what I would think of when I think of love stories where one of them dies.
Starring Brandon Lee and ending Brandon Lee. But it's, him and his fiance, they have this amazing life. He's this great rock star. They have a wedding coming up. And they're brutally murdered and assaulted by a gang of thugs. And he just happens to get a chance to come back and avenge it. And it's much like Up, where, like, she died at the beginning. The wife died at the beginning. But that sets off everything else. He doesn't attach the balloons to the house if it's not for his wife dying. He doesn't come back from the dead to avenge his dead fiance
if there's no dead fiance.
Yeah. I love this movie. It's made in 94. It's 25 years old now, which is nuts to me because it still holds up. The soundtrack, still dope. You know at least 10 people that have owned this soundtrack.
be one of them.
Yes, anybody that's owned a CD, 9 out of 10 people that owned a CD ever owned this soundtrack.
I would say let's expand that to 10 out of 10 people that own CDs have either The Crow or City of Angels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
and Forrest Gump, that was a hell of a soundtrack too.
So, I mean, I went with The Crow, number one. It's a love story, revenge story. And then as I was thinking, it's like, oh, this could be like all revenge movies. But we've done revenge movies. Because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, how many revenge movies are avenging the death of a white, like The Punisher could even be.
Yeah.
But I kept it light. I just went with my number one. The Crow is my favorite love story where somebody dies and then a lot more people die as a result of that. Did you have any also-rans?
You mentioned Titanic. Obviously, that one's, it's an also-ran, then it's one of the first ones that comes to mind. I mentioned love story already. Brokeback Mountain is one, spoiler alert, where one of them dies. And this one, it's not obvious. I mean, I guess it is, but it's a movie that I talk about a lot. I fucking love Odd Thomas.
Yeah, that's a big spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
I didn't think that one didn't come to mind. She's really bad, but I like that girl, that Addison Timlin or whatever.
Yeah.
She's not a good actress, but she's great in that
she's
movie.
She's good in that movie. That their chemistry is like excellent. Yeah. Anton Yelchin, RIP.
She, yeah, she's so good in that movie. I thought What Dreams May Come is an obvious one.
Yeah.
That's another one where it's like, that's the whole plot. City of Angels. Ghost is, I think, one of the most
yes.
obvious ones.
Yeah.
Irreplaceable You. It was a Netflix movie last year with Michael Wiesem from Game of Thrones. Or he's Cal on Orphan Black. It's a good movie. It's similar to the P.S. I Love You, whereas P.S. I Love You is him after he dies. This one is his girlfriend who's dying, trying to get him to move on and find somebody so she knows he's happy on the way. And then I feel like I'd have got a lot more slack than The Crow if I'd have put John Wick on there.
Because of the dog?
Not so much because of the dog, but the whole reason he loved the dog was that's all he had left of her.
I suppose that's true, yeah.
So that's where I thought I couldn't do John Wick and The Crow. That might be stretching it, but that was it. This is another one of those where
There's a million
that we didn't even think of. Like, I didn't think of My Girl. So I'm sure there's some we missed. Hopefully we jogged your thoughts and you're thinking of ones that you like. The Notebook, I think one of them died probably because they're old.
At least one of them, if not both of them.
Yeah. This was a fun list. Like, when you first thought it, it's like, oh, that'll require some work. But then, like,
not really.
Yeah. No, once they started coming to me, And like I said, I stopped. I probably could have come up with probably 10 more.
Yeah, this is one that, if we're lacking for ideas next Valentine's Day, I could see it coming back around a part two. There's so many love stories, and I guess there's a couple branching paths on them, and one of them is where one of them dies. Not only are you getting the love feels in there, but you're also getting the loss feels, and you just start ripping it all out of your chest.
Next week, we go from love to law. Captain Marvel comes out. We wanted to do a favorite Brie Larson episode, but I feel like that would be
heavy
a lot
crossover.
Of crossover, because we both like pretty much everything she's been in. So we're going with Jude Law. Doing our favorite Jude Law movies.
Because we've done Samuel L. Jackson already.
Yeah, so I think it's same reason we did Bruce Willis instead of McAvoy. Yeah. This is the same as Glass. We wanted to do McAvoy, just like we wanted to do Brie Larson. It would have been a lot of crossover. So
Samuel L. Jackson.
Nope, done it. So Jude Law is this week's Bruce Willis.
Next week's Bruce Willis. Yeah.
So next week we do our favorite Jude Law movies, and then we go into March and go from there as we lead up into summer. With our summer preview, and all that's in like a month or so away. Mm-hmm. So next week is Jude Law. Hope your loved ones don't die. Until next time,
keep it up.